The account we're looking at this morning occurs in other Gospels. I have preached on this account in various contexts over the years, and I don't think I've got the proportions right. I don't think I've gotten the proportions right in dealing with this account as it occurs in Matthew and the other Gospels. You see, as I've studied this account and as I've taught on it, I've tended to focus, I think naturally, on the response of the disciples, the response of these fishermen, without giving enough attention to the call itself. The call from Jesus. Our tendency is to want to place ourselves within this story so that when we come to a passage like this, we naturally think in terms of, would I have responded in the same way? Would I have responded like these men? We tend to think in terms of, how can I be faithful as the men in this passage were faithful? Well, as we study this brief account from Matthew 4 this morning, I pray we get the proportions right. To achieve this, we need to resist moving past the call of Jesus too quickly. Let's hear it again. While walking by the Sea of Galilee, Jesus saw two brothers, Simon, who is called Peter, and Andrew his brother, casting a net into the sea, for they were fishermen. And Jesus said to them, "Follow me, and I will make you fishers of men." We ought to note, first of all, what Jesus did not say. What Jesus did not say. He didn't say, "Excuse me, gentlemen. Now, I'm sorry to interrupt what you're doing, but I wonder if I could give you something to consider. I want to present to you a special opportunity to follow me." No, it didn't go like that at all. The call of Jesus to follow is less of an invitation, and it's more like a command. The call of Jesus is less like an invitation, and it's more like a command. One commentator likens the calling of the fishermen to the creation account. What does he mean? In Genesis, God says, "Let there be light." And there's light. He says, "Let there be stars." And there's stars. Similarly, when Jesus summons a person with the words, "Follow me," the outcome's not in question. It's certain. Now, I realize some will resist this line of thinking, saying that this portrays us as being like robots or being like puppets in our response to God. Star Wars fans may drift into thinking that Jesus is exercising the equivalent of a Jedi mind trick. "Follow me." But that's not an accurate assessment. The best analogy that I can think of comes from my teen years, where my mother would say to me, "Bryn, come and wash these dishes." Or, "Bryn, come and take out the garbage." And if I were slow in my response, my mother had a statement she would always say. She would say, "I'm not asking you to do this." And what she was meaning to convey was that she wasn't making a request. She was giving a command. Wash the dishes. Take out the garbage. And because I understood my place within the household, I understood where I fit in terms of the authority in my household, because I understood this, I did what she asked. Theoretically, I could have resisted. Theoretically, I could have disregarded. But because I understood that she was in charge, I did what she asked. Well, if the summons of my mother caused my compliance, how much more should the summons of the Son of God compel our compliance and our obedience? I don't want to diminish the choice-making capacity of these men. The compelling call does not negate a willful response. Matthew says, immediately they left their nets and they followed him. As immediate as it was a real decision that was made by Peter and by Andrew. There's a much longer version of this account in Luke's Gospel, chapter 5, which would help us to better understand why they saw Jesus as being Lord. And it relates to them being out fishing all night and not catching a single fish. But then this man tells them to drop their nets on the other side of the boat, and immediately the net is filled with fish. Well, Matthew and Mark, for whatever reason, leave that detail out. Perhaps Matthew and Mark don't want anything to obscure or take away from the main point, that Jesus summoned men to follow, and they followed. And what we'll see as we study Matthew's gospel in the weeks and months to come is that his portrayal of Jesus, as you see it here in chapter 4, is consistent how Jesus is portrayed throughout this gospel. What do I mean by that? The words spoken by Jesus are accompanied by great power. The words spoken by Jesus are accompanied by great power. Jesus says, follow me, and men follow. And then you move on in the text, and there's a leper. And to the leper, Jesus says, be clean. And the leper is cleansed. A little further on, there are two men possessed by demons. And Jesus speaks the demons out of the men. You have the wind and the sea that's raging around the boat of the disciples, and Jesus speaks calm into the sea and to the wind. Then there's a centurion who has a servant who is ailing, and he even understands that Jesus doesn't need to be present to heal the servant, he needs only to speak a word. The healing of the paralytic. The list goes on and on. Everything is set right in a moment by Jesus speaking an authoritative word. The Son of God, though he is fully human, remains as sovereign Lord. The Son of God, though fully human in Jesus, remains as our sovereign Lord. So his call, his summons, his words, they're effective. One of the ways we show ourselves to be disciples of Jesus is whether or not we follow. Because when Jesus calls someone to follow, they follow. When he says be healed, they're healed. When he says get up and walk, they walk. And so if we're not following Jesus, it calls into question whether he's called us in the first place. The particular call of Jesus compels a particular response from his followers. He summons and we follow. He summons and our life changes. He summons and we begin to think differently. He summons and we begin to talk differently. He summons and our life is turned upside down and it changes. And if it doesn't, we might not yet be called. Matthew says, Jesus issues a call and immediately Peter and Andrew leave their nets and follow. The pattern's then repeated with James and John, the sons of Zebedee. Jesus calls them, and immediately they leave their boat and their father and follow him. It's worth highlighting that the disciples of Jesus immediately follow. The first disciples responded immediately to the call of Jesus. Many of us, I think, would hesitate. Many of us, I think, would have some serious questions. Before we commit ourselves, Jesus, tell us a little bit about your game plan. What's your 3-year plan? What's your 5-year vision? Because if I'm going to turn my life upside down, I need to know where you're headed with all this. Some of us would have said, you know, I've got family that I'm responsible for. I need some time to talk this over with them, to get their blessing, to get their permission. Some of us would want to know, what are the accommodations? What's the stipend? Jesus, do you have a manse that we'll be living in? There's no sign of hesitation on the part of Simon, Andrew, James, and John. They are said to follow immediately. That's the first thing I want us to note. The second thing is that the disciples left significant things in order to follow Jesus. They left significant things in order to follow Jesus. Matthew tells us that Peter and Andrew left their nets. That's Matthew's way of telling us that these men are leaving behind their livelihood, that they're quitting their job, as it were, to follow. The description of what James and John leave behind is even more striking than that. Matthew says that they left their father Zebedee in the boat, and they followed Jesus. Imagine just for a minute being Zebedee here in this account. Imagine being Zebedee, and you're watching this unfold from your vantage point. What are those boys doing? They should be over here helping me clean these nets. Who is that man that they're talking to? I don't recognize him. Why are they leaving with this man? I think this is important to note, what the disciples left behind. Because I have met a great many people over the years who would like to have Jesus, but are unwilling to give up anything to have him. Men and women who want Jesus added to their life, but they don't want to relinquish anything. They don't want any disruptions. I've met many men and women who want to add Jesus and his likeness, but they still want to clutch and hang on to the comforts of this world. Jesus does not call a person to play second fiddle in our life. Read the Gospels. This is not a laissez-faire, take it or leave it, come and go as you please. This is a sovereign summons. Jesus calls us to follow him as Lord. He calls us as Master. When we are his servants, and when he summons, it's not a request. Peter understood, as did Andrew, James, and John. They understood what was happening. And so they leave their livelihood behind, and they follow Jesus. They leave behind family, and they follow Jesus. Now, I'm suggesting that they had a sense of who Jesus was. That they had a sense that this was no ordinary man. But I don't think for a minute they knew precisely who Jesus was. It's not as if Jesus walked over and said, "Good afternoon. Now, you may not know me or know this, but I'm the Son of God. And I was conceived by the Holy Spirit 3 decades ago. And I want you to know that I'm here on a mission to save humanity. And if you follow me, you're going to see and do some incredible things. And you'll be remembered throughout history." That's not what Jesus said. As far as we know, Jesus simply had some fish go into the nets. And that was it. That was enough. Now, you'll be relieved to hear me say that I'm not suggesting any of you quit your job in the morning. Barry's not leaving here because he heard this sermon in advance and quit Atlantis. You're not being asked to resign from your position. But there's an immediacy. There's an immediacy to the fisherman's response that I don't want us to miss. And there's a level of commitment in terms of what they leave behind that I think we need to pay attention to and emulate in our life. I want to challenge us this morning to assume a posture of saying yes to Jesus Christ. Now, I realize that may sound like a rather basic instruction. What did the pastor ask you to do this morning? He asked me to say yes to Jesus. Well, that seems rather basic, don't you think? Well, here's why I'm urging us in this regard. COVID-19 is training us. Make no mistake, COVID-19 is training us to say no to a great many things. COVID-19 has become for us the prevailing reason why we don't do a whole bunch of things. We're told that the slow service at the bank is because of COVID-19. Your government documents aren't ready yet because of COVID-19. The inventory at your food store is low because of COVID-19. For 2 years, we've been told what we can't do and what we shouldn't do. And I'm not saying that the protocols aren't helpful. I'm not saying that. Nor am I saying that the COVID excuses aren't legitimate excuses. What I want us awakened to this morning is the reality that your default response has been reprogrammed. It's become way too easy to say no to a great many things because of this pandemic. And I fear it has become increasingly easy to say no to the things of Christ. To what degree are you even aware that you've said no to the things of Christ? This passage reminds us, Jesus summons us to follow Him. He bids us to gather for worship, to attend to His table and to His word. He bids us to go and to share the gospel and to make disciples. And much of that which Christ calls us to can't be done in isolation. It can't be done if our default response is no. When Jesus calls a person, He calls us to be a part of a larger band of followers. And so we've got to rethink how we've been responding to the call of Christ. We've been conditioned by this pandemic to say no. We've been programmed by this pandemic to say not yet. We've been conditioned to say, that's too much of an ask. 2,000 years ago, Jesus called 4 fishermen, and they left everything to follow Him. Jesus calls men and women today. He summons you. And He summons me. And we need to return to the posture that says yes. The posture that says yes to Jesus and no to the world. Yes to the Word and no to the many distractions that creep in. We need to return to saying yes to the things of Christ and making His priorities our great priorities. Saying yes to Jesus, I need to warn you, it's going to be disruptive. It's going to be disruptive if you say yes unequivocally to the call of Jesus. It's going to be uncomfortable how certain parts of your life are changed in response to the call. But I assure you, this is the best way. Even if Jesus turns your life and mine upside down, even if He disrupts us, even if He makes us uncomfortable, it's the best way. Following Jesus is the best way because it's the true way. And it's the only way, it's the only path that truly satisfies. I pray that we'll stop making excuses and that we'll stop delaying. Begin once again to say yes to Jesus. Say yes to Jesus today. Say yes to Jesus every day and forevermore. Amen.